Welcome, fellow plebs. My name is Sean, and this is
Tribunus Plebis.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the episode. As always, I'm glad that you're here with me. Okay, so first thing I want to do here is kind of talk about a running theme in this podcast concerning government and our reactions to it. And I'm going to use a clip here from a prolific comedian who we've all heard and loved, one George Carlin. Here it is.
Yeah. Sooner or later, the people in this country are going to realize the government does not give a fuck about them. Government doesn't care about you or your children or your rights or your welfare or your safety. It simply doesn't give a fuck about you. It's interested in its own power. That's the only thing, keeping it and expanding it wherever possible.
It's pretty straightforward, right? The government does not care about you, and, you know, that any supposed mistakes it might make should be considered purposeful acts of harm. And if you've been listening to this podcast up to this point, you know I talk about this a lot. And if you're new here, please check out the back catalog, especially the last two episodes where I've hit on this at numerous points. And this notion that Carlin lays out, it strikes me as true. And it probably strikes all of you as true as well. And the reason why we agree with this clip, aside from the obvious truth that it talks about, is because it is so broad. I've heard this clip a lot over the last year because, oddly enough, a rap song I like actually uses it as an opening to that song. You hear Carlin's sexy-ass voice over the beginning of a beat, and the whole thing just works perfectly. But the other day, I heard it, and it reminded me of something I heard years ago. I think it was like an actual poll or it might have even been just like a political joke, I don't know, but it has always seemed very true to me either way. And the past 5 or 6 years has really hammered the truth of it home. And to be honest with everybody, I don't remember the precise numbers used, so I'm going to make some up, but the numbers were as stunningly lopsided as I will make them for this example. The premise started by noting that something like 90% of voters thought that Congress is doing a terrible job and that they are corrupt and out of touch. The next number was that 90% of voters approve of the job that the congressperson who they personally voted for was doing a good job and that they were not corrupt and that they were very much in touch with what was going on in regular people's lives. Now, obviously, these numbers might be a bit hyperbolic, but not by a lot. In fact, right now, it's even worse. Biden's approval rating has been as high as 98% with Democratic voters and as low as 11% for Republican voters. This is pretty disturbing. So broadly, these people thought that Congress people were corrupt and doing a bad job. More narrowly, they felt like the person who they personally voted for was the exception. And I think that we can see where these numbers, whether real or not, don't make a lot of sense and fall apart under scrutiny. We tend to think that the government, in air quotes, is doing a bad job. Yet we also think that the people we vote for, either directly or through party affiliation, are doing good. Now, it is possible to hold these two ideas at the same time. I do think that people like Bernie Sanders or AOC are actually trying to do good things. And I also think that Congress is a fucking cesspool that is largely and actively trying to harm us. And I didn't even vote for either of those two people. But they are of a small minority that I genuinely think are trying to do good things. And I'll just add here that all of these people are definitely not perfect. They have bad takes, take questionable or just outright bad votes, and do things that I just plain don't agree with. But largely, yes, I think they are decent people. Okay, so before we get back to the Carlin quote and how it fits in here, I just want to take a second to talk about context and Carlin himself. I have seen this quote and other sentiments from Carlin's comedy and social critiques being used by super right-wing chuds and your base-level conservatives in social media posts and memes and whatnot. And listen, George Carlin was not a conservative. I just want to throw that out there. He did not agree with conservatives. He actually despised the entire worldview, as far as I can tell. And his words are being taken out of context and used to express opposite views of those which he held when he originally spoke those words. The clip I played of Carlin is essentially the end of a longer screed where he talks about rights and where they come from and who actually grants the rights and enforces them. Unsurprisingly, it's the government. But also he talks quite a bit about how wrong it is to lock innocent people in concentration camps, using the Japanese Americans that our country illegally and immorally locked in concentration camps during World War II, to make his point. He was saying that the government doesn't care about you because they will lock you up if you let them normalize such egregious inhumanities. A lesson which we need to learn right now, as we currently have concentration camps on our borders as I record this. Think about that. Don't try to justify these camps. Just think about what Carlin was trying to tell you. Hell, go listen to the entire bit on YouTube. It's a weird situation. Without government, there are no rights. Yet the government can take those rights at a whim. So anyway, the whole where do rights come from thing is probably an entire series of podcast episodes. So let's get back to the clip itself. I bet all of you heard it and agreed. It's actually pretty easy to agree with. But what if I changed a couple of key words? What if I said this? Yep, sooner or later, the people in this country are going to realize that Democrats don't give a fuck about them. The Democrats don't care about you or your children or your rights or your welfare or your safety. They simply don't give a fuck about you. They're interested in their own power. That's the only thing, keeping it and expanding it wherever possible. Would you all still agree if you had voted for Biden? Probably not, if you're being honest. And if I inserted Republican instead of Democrat and you voted for Trump, or even just, you know, down ballot Republicans since Trump is so polarizing, would you still agree? If you did agree, would you just full stop right there? Or do you feel it necessary to say, but the other team is worse? Do you feel the need to say that either out loud or in your head? Was your first reaction to begin to defend your position and frame that other party as the real bad guys? This is something I like to think about all the time, and this Carlin quote kind of drives some of it home. And I mean, listen, I've violently, verbally attacked Joe Biden right here in this podcast. And even then, when I hear some dork say something bad about Joe Biden, I still sometimes want to defend the guy. Or, you know what? That's actually a little strong. Let me take that back. I don't really want to defend Biden very often, but I do get that urge to do the whole what about thing. What about Trump? What about the Republicans and so on? And the same thing I hear Trump lovers doing. It's fucking weird. The dissonance is uncomfortable and baffling to me. It's much the same way that I can say that Trump told an obvious and provable lie and play the actual interview in its entirety and all of its context, and a Trump supporter will still say, that's just Trump derangement syndrome, you libtard. And they really believe it. Or they might not even address the lie itself and just mention a time that Biden lied, as if that matters in relation to Trump's lie. They really can't deal with the fact that the person they voted for told a lie. Like, just that simple of a fact has to be rewritten in their brains as a fictional disease that they call Trump derangement syndrome. It's just too much for them to deal with. But I think that this feeling is good to have, and I don't mean the reactionary defensiveness, but the realization that, yeah, these people suck, and that this is where our system leaves us. Not with just imperfect souls who quote unquote lead us, but with actually malevolent, demonic hell beings that mind fuck us into simping for them. And that's not just the elected demons either. Those are just the faces of hell. They are backed by vast, corpse-fueled, ash-spewing media machinery that bombards our brains day after day and night after night with relentless lies, disinformation, bigotry, and chauvinism. We are being made to feel this way. And the larger point that I guess I'm trying to drive home as far as I can without making you all hate me is that we need to stop pretending that only part of this government is bad. We need to stop pretending that the other team is the problem. We need to stop pretending that if that so-called opposition party wasn't there, that we would somehow be better off. And listen, I know that this is like the third episode in a row where I've talked about this, and I'll stop for a bit after this one, unless something obviously relevant happens. And as a side note, the stimulus bill might pass soon, and this will be relevant again, so don't get too comfortable. But I won't spam you with this anymore. I just really want all of us to understand that if you mostly support Biden, that it's okay to admit that, one, he sucks on many, many issues, and two, that Trump actually did a good thing somewhere. I have my list of good things Trump did. Go write your own. I promise they exist if you actually look. You don't have to be terrified of this. And then make a list of bad things Biden has done. It should be a pretty long list, by the way. And then just reverse that if you like Trump. Like if I say, Biden opened a concentration camp for kids on the border, just say, yeah, that's fucked up. We need to fight him on that. That's kind of a healthy approach, right? It's just, yeah. That's wrong. Let's change that. The unhealthy response to that same fact is, but Trump locked up more and Trump is evil and Orange Man bad and blah, blah, blah. It's genuinely not difficult to admit that somebody is flawed. You can do that and not cast them into the sun. Even if I'd like to cast these people into the sun. It's okay to criticize politicians you largely support even. I really want everyone to really understand that. And our latest iteration of that phenomenon of refusing to criticize political actors is in the form of a woman named Jennifer Psaki, the current White House press secretary. Now, I really want you to focus on the next 10 seconds or so, okay? The job of the White House press secretary is literally to lie to us. The press secretary is the mouthpiece of the president, and as such, the press secretary is a liar and a tool of propaganda. We all saw this during Trump's reign as Sean Spicer, Sarah Sanders, and Kayleigh McEnany stood behind that podium and told the most blatant, naked lies that the world has ever seen, and it continues to this day with Jennifer Psaki. The streak of inveterate liars remains unbroken. But now the media is basically canonizing this woman for spreading her propaganda. Why? Because she does it with prettier language and not as brazenly. She is infinitely more clever and more skilled at hiding the lies under layers of words and sentences, but yet she still lies. The media and Twitter dorks have even coined a term for Psaki's clever turns of phrase and subtle and not-so-subtle digs at Trump and his administration. These smooth-brained dimwits have begun to call these moments Psaki bombs. Yep, Psaki bombs. My head hurts, everybody. It just hurts. Don't let these people tell you otherwise. Jennifer Psaki is just as big a liar as Sean Spicer was. She's just better at it. The lies are literally the job in this case. No White House press secretary is ever telling you the truth unless it's about the current time or something. Every single word they speak is in service to the propaganda that the White House wishes to put into this world. In other words, it is all lies, whether outright, through subtle subterfuge, via careful omissions, or clever avoidance. But all of it is lies. Stop holding up the clever liar as being better than the ham-fisted one. You guys have that shit fully fucking reversed. We really need to stop doing this stuff. How many times must we get kicked right in our teeth before we learn the lesson here? Just in my lifetime, Reagan, Big Bush, Clinton, the Shrub, Obama, Trump, and now Biden. All liars, all proven so. Some worse than others, Reagan and Shrub topped that list with Trump running up behind them. But the separation between the top three and fourth and fifth isn't that much. The Gipper and the Shrub are not winning this race in a blowout. And all of those people are heroes to like at least half of us. Many, like Reagan, Clinton, and the Shrub, have had extensive media operations run to launder and rehabilitate their despicable images. We can even see the same thing happened to Sean Spicer. Spicer abetted a truly evil man as he lied to everybody in this country every single day. He stole our tax dollars and lied to us that entire time and helped push forward a cruel, immoral, and often illegal agenda upon this country. And then he gets a spot on SNL soon after he's been fired. And the liberal establishment praised him and laughed along with him. This guy's a fucking asshole and should be shunned. That's just an absolute fact. This guy didn't even say sorry, and you fed him like a hero returning from a righteous war. He lied to promote racist policy. He lied to promote nationalism. He lied to help a monster do monstrous things. And he didn't even have to work for his reintegration into our good graces. Y'all just handed it to him. I'm starting to wonder how many people in this country actually have any core beliefs at all that they are willing to fight for at all. Like, I'm not even really asking you to, like, literally fight and die for them. Just fight for them in the sense of, you know, like, online or with your friends. You guys are very, very anti-racism when a guy you don't like is in charge, and suddenly it's not too big of a deal when your boy does it. And just to call back to my mentioning of border concentration camps a little ways back, I heard you all raging against children in cages just 4 months ago. Now you're trying to justify it. You're telling me that the kitty cells are cleaner and larger now, so it's okay. That a more humane locking up of children in this country is good. No, motherfuckers, it's still bad. This isn't hard. And into this mire strolls Kyrsten Sinema, darling of the conservative liberal Democrats. We might ask why this woman is a darling of the corporate wing of the Democratic Party, aside from the fact that she supports all kinds of corporate-sponsored policy. And if we did, we would find out that it's because she is openly bisexual, which is awesome in and of itself. We need more people from diverse backgrounds and experiences to be involved with this stuff. But we can't just pretend like her politics don't suck and that she's not conservative just because she likes both men and women. There are plenty of gay, non-binary, transgendered, bisexual, polyamorous, and every other label you can think of out there who also have good belief systems. Let's talk about them instead of this conservative woman who has a D next to her name. And so, why all this ire for this woman? Well, she brought a chocolate cake into the Senate and then very theatrically, with a cute little curtsy even, gave a big thumbs down to a $15 minimum wage vote. An actual, modern, real-life, let-them-eat-cake moment. And part of that anger is that she came up through the ranks as a progressive who said she wanted to fight for those who were struggling to make ends meet. But when she got into Congress, she immediately began voting for corporate malfeasance, deregulation of finance, and too often with Republican policies meant to harm the middle and lower classes, which she swore she was here to help. Sinema represents Arizona, and her thumb down was reminiscent of another Arizona senator's thumb down, the one that John McCain, himself a terrible senator, gave to keep the Republican Party from entirely repealing the Affordable Care Act. But as bad as McCain could be, his thumb down actually helped millions of Americans retain essential health care coverage. Sinema's thumb down relegated millions to continued poverty. No, she wasn't really the deciding vote. There were 7 other Democrats who voted no on this thing, but the lighthearted little bounce she did while depriving millions of Americans a much-needed raise was just a little too much. And these were the other 7 Democrats who voted to keep millions in poverty. Joe Manchin of West Virginia, Angus King of Maine, John Tester of Montana, Jean Shaheen of New Hampshire, Maggie Hassan of New Hampshire. And I should note that Angus King is actually an independent, but he caucuses with the Democrats. And joining along with them were Chris Coons and Tom Carper of Delaware, Joe Biden's home state and famously home to some of the most corporate-friendly senators of my lifetime, including Joe Biden, for the entirety of his political career. In fact, Joe Biden was known as the senator from MBNA. MBNA was a massive credit card issuer and amazingly profitable corporation famous for hiring former FBI agents as executives. Let that sink in for a second. And which funded Joe Biden for years. But hey, it's okay. Because those same Democrats voted to get you a $2,000 check every month until COVID is over so that you aren't homeless or hungry. That is pretty gosh darn nice of the... Oh, hang on a second. Let me check my notes. Oh, that's right. The Democrats negotiated against themselves and that $2,000 every month got lowered some. Now it's a $1,400 check. One time. Great. Oh, and it's also means tested, and there's a bunch of restrictions on it, meaning millions of people won't get it. Wonderful. And it looks like this COVID relief bill will pass this week and be signed into law shortly after. And we can even look forward to an episode or two of the Tribunus Plebis podcast to help myself and you fine listeners understand who actually benefited from this monster bill and who didn't. Any guesses right now as to who these two groups might be and which way the winds might blow? I have my guess how those questions will be answered, and we will all know whether I am correct or not in the coming weeks. Stay tuned to the podcast as we figure it out. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to the Tribunus Plebis podcast. I appreciate every single listen, and as we continue to grow, your support means the world to me. If you would like to support the podcast just a tiny bit more, please take a few seconds to click the Apple Podcast link right there in the episode description and leave a rating and even a review. Ratings and reviews on Apple are the single best way to help a small podcast grow, and we appreciate every single one we have gotten so far. Thank you all. I love you.